start the call for today. We've already chanted the prayers, and we will continue reading from chapter 11, Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. So we've read about, I've summarized these things in my email about how, you know, Lord Krishna blows his conch shell and how everyone is so happy that the Lord is back. It's like when Jagannath Rath Yatra happens. For a week, Jagannath is not in the temple because Jagannath is not well and Jagannath is getting better. And then we all get this darshan in the Rath Yatra, then we all become so happy. And then after the Rath Yatra, he comes straight to the temple. So when he comes to the temple, and then you see him again on the altar after 1 week, we feel so happy. So something similar. I mean, I can't explain it myself because I don't have so much love for Krishna as the residents of Dwarka have. And probably have no love for Krishna, maybe very little, like very little attraction for Krishna. And I can't call it love. But they are so lovingly, they are welcoming Krishna. So I was hearing a class on some other topic today morning. But then in that, the speaker was telling that real faith develops in how we directly experience Krishna through our sadhana, through devotion and through our satsang. And if we learn how to experience properly, Krishna will reciprocate in the same way with our loving emotion. So I just typed that out in the email I sent out. So we have this opportunity of welcoming Lord Krishna every single day, every single moment, just like how the residents of Dwarka are feeling separation from Lord Krishna. But then when Lord Krishna is there, they are welcoming him. So for us also, in the morning when we wake up and when we are chanting, that is an opportunity for us to welcome Krishna, just like how the residents of Dwarka are welcoming Krishna. Then every time we are doing a service, that is our opportunity to serve Krishna, as we will read further in this chapter how the residents of Dwarka are serving Krishna. Then when the conch shell blows, right, here also Krishna is blowing the conch shell and is telling that I am coming, I am here. So in the morning, or before the aarti, when the conch shell is blowing, before the curtain opening in the morning, for the morning aarti and the Shringar aarti and then the Aftabhoga aarti, and then the aarti in the evening after the Lord wakes up after resting, then the aarti at 8:30 again after the Lord has eaten. So all these aartis, the conch shell is blowing, the same way the Lord is blowing the conch shell here. And it's heralding his arrival. It's telling, hey, I'm here, look at me. So how in those different things we experience the Lord's presence and we feel for the Lord and we show to the Lord that yes, I am very excited to see you. Not just show, means you really mean it. You really mean from the bottom of your heart that you're so excited to take the Lord's darshan again when the conch shell is blowing. So when we have this opportunity of directly experiencing Krishna through our sadhana, through our devotion, through the aartis, through the satsang programs we go to, through the association of devotees. We have this particular opportunity every single day, that the opportunity the Dwarkavasis got, that we are reading. And how we directly experience Krishna in all these opportunities, instead of just treating all of these things mechanically, but seeing them as an opportunity to experience Krishna's love, experience the intimacy with Krishna, experience Krishna's closeness, and to surrender to Krishna. The more we do that, the more Krishna is going to reciprocate with your emotions. And by doing these things properly, in the way we just discussed, we become ready to ultimately welcome Krishna in our hearts as we go further in our bhakti. So every moment we have the chance to practice this thing. So we will take inspiration from these people, from Dwarkavasis, and we will learn many lessons from this. It's a very beautiful pastime. So I think we will now read from text 6. Yeah, we read about the offering of a lamb to the sun last week. So now text 6. Nata smitenata sadangi pankajam విరించ వైరించ సురేంద్ర వందితం పరాయణం క్షేమమిహేచ్ఛతాం పరం నయత్ర కాల ప్రభవే పర ప్రభో. The citizen said, O Lord, you are worshipped by all demigods like Lord Brahma, the four sunas, and even the king of heaven. You are the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. You are the supreme transcendental Lord, and inevitable time cannot exert its influence upon you. The supreme Lord is Sri Krishna, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Samhita and other authorized Vedic literatures. No one is equal to or greater than him, and that is the verdict of all scriptures. The influence of time and space is exerted upon the dependent living entities, who are all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. The living entities are predominated Brahma, whereas the Supreme Lord is the predominating Absolute. As soon as we forget this clear fact, we are at once in illusion, and thus we are put into threefold miseries. As one is put into dense darkness, the clear consciousness of the cognizant living being is God consciousness, in which one bows down unto him in all circumstances. So there are two very important lines in this translation. While we'll discuss the second one first. You are the supreme transcendental Lord, and inevitable time cannot exert its influence upon you. So yesterday in the Bhagavad Gita class that we have in Bellevue, we were reading Janma Karma Chame Devyam Evam Yo Veti Tatpataha Tektva Deham Punar Janma Naiti Mameti So Arjuna. So we were reading how, one who understands the transcendental nature of the Lord's appearance and his activities, you know, such a person is eligible for the highest goal, the highest benefit, right? So we all know, okay, Lord is transcendental to them all, he is supreme controller, he is the creator of all this energy, we are his parts and parcels and all. So knowledge just remains in the head. So Bhagavad Gita is not telling that, okay, you understand like this in the head, that means, you know, you will never come back to this world again. That's not what that verse means. That verse means that once you understand the Lord is transcendental, his birth is transcendental, he is not forced to take birth, like how we are forced to take birth because of our karma. And he appears at his own will. And why does he appear? To help the living entities, to give association to the living entities, to protect the sadhus, to protect his devotees, and to give association to them. So then when we understand these things, what we basically understand is that the Lord is transcendental, his birth is transcendental, he is beyond the modes of material nature, he is the supreme proprietor, controller, enjoyer, everything. And why is he coming to protect us? Because we are his parts and parcels. So now, because we are his parts and parcels means what? What does that mean? That means we also have the same nature. That means we are also transcendental to this material world. That means we also have the same qualities as the Lord, but in less quantity. And that actually time cannot exert its influence upon you. We are also actually beyond these modes of material nature, being spirit. So we are away from all these matters. But we are entangled ourselves in this matter. So that means, what do we want to do? Oh, the Lord is coming to take me because I am stuck here. How can I myself make myself unstuck? So when the Lord comes here, he gives a process. So I must follow that process to come out. So when we follow the process like that properly, in this understanding that the Lord is transcendental, I am his part and parcel, makes me also transcendental to all of these things. My nature is different from this material world. I am eternal and spiritual. And I need to follow the process that the Lord give every time he comes to reclaim all the devotees, so that I can also go back to God. So that is the meaning of the verse. So we have to understand this thing carefully, and every time we read this thing, you are the supreme transcendental Lord, and inevitable time cannot exert its influence upon you. We have to understand, oh, I have the same nature as the Lord. So, you know, this, I'm allowing myself to get entangled in all of these things. Actually, none of these things can affect me if I take shelter of the Lord, because then the Lord will protect me. And then this first line, you are the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. So we all are trying at different degrees to achieve the highest benefit of life. We are all making some attempt. Sometimes our attempts are very weak, sometimes our attempts are very strong. And When the attempts are weak, sometimes we realize the attempts are weak. Sometimes we don't even realize the attempts are weak. We think the attempts are strong and we are on the right path because we are so conditioned. So when, because we want to achieve the highest benefit of life, which is unconditional, unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Supreme Lord and His devotees, and we want our attempts to be very strong, we have to depend upon our ultimate rest for that. So every morning, every day, every minute, we have to make very intense prayers to the Lord and to the devotees to pray for their mercy so that our attempts never become feeble, so that our attempts are always very strong, so that our spiritual, our understanding of our spiritual needs increases and the amount of material needs we have automatically decrease, so that we can stay committed to our sadhana. The way we discussed earlier, as I was discussing from another lecture I had heard, through every minute trying to see Krishna through our chanting of the holy names, through the darshan that we take of the Lord, through the satsang and association, and through the different processes of devotional service that the Lord gives. So talking about association, we have to understand when we are meeting devotees and we are hanging in the temple and we are with all the people there, is that association? Okay, that's better than hanging around with materialistic people. But when this is not like, you know, the association, that is just basic association. We are coming to the temple and we are surrounding ourselves with devotees. But association is also what kind of conversations we are having with each other. Are we just talking about how we spent our weekend or what new product is on sale somewhere? Or are we also discussing about, oh, I am trying to, I heard this lecture and I'm very inspired by this particular point. You know, I need you to pray for me so that I can apply this particular point in my life. Or, and then, you know, I'm struggling with my chanting. I'm having a terrible, you know, I'm not chanting properly. I'm not focusing and I really need help. And please say something to me so that it helps me. Can you say something to encourage me? Or just sharing how you were successful in applying a certain point from some lecture that you had heard. So all these things increase the quality of your association. Yes, we have kids and we discuss about kids and how to feed the kids and what classes to put them in all. Yes, all that is a service and we must do, but our association must just not be limited to that. And also our association must just not be limited to just lamentation. I'm not doing this properly, I'm not doing that properly, I'm not getting anywhere, I'm not going anywhere. That again is you're putting yourself as a center in your devotional service. It's about you, it's not about Krishna. So we have to learn how to get and receive the energy from each other. That is by association, that is by doing this kind of discussion. And Lord Krishna recommends this type of discussion in the 11th canto. When I'm able to pull out the verse, I will pull it out. It goes something like, when devotees meet each other, they ask, you know, how much of your sense gratification have you reduced? Something like that. That's what the verse says. So when we are saying how much of our sense gratification we have reduced, is basically talking about how you are making attempts to go further in devotional service. You know, all these things. So we have to learn how to discuss that. Not just the technicalities of some service and the schedules and the who's doing what. Yeah, that's good. You are discussing about service, but you have to take the next step, deeper level. Because half the time when you commit to somebody or when you just share with somebody what you are doing, the process of Ishtagoshti is so strong that just by you sharing your weakness openly with someone or sharing your struggle openly with someone, you get the strength from the other person, the prayers of that devotee to be able to overcome that weakness. So we want to learn this and we want to apply this in our life. Text 7.
Bhavayanatvam bhavavishva bhavana Tvam eva matatta suhitpati pita Tvam sadgururna paramam cha daivatam Yasyanu vitya kritino bhuvima.
O creator of the universe, you are our mother, well-wisher, lord, father, spiritual master and worshipable deity. By following in your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray therefore that you continue to bless us with your mercy. So see, this ultimate rest that we discussed in the previous verse, over here we are reading how the residents of Dwaraka are seeing the Lord as their ultimate rest. Here they are saying, you are our mother, well-wisher, Lord, Father, spiritual master and worshipable deity.
By following in your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that you continue to bless us with your mercy. So Prabhupada is writing down, our relation with him is eternal. It can be neither broken nor vanquished. It may be forgotten for the time being, but it can be revived also by the grace of the Lord if we follow his injunctions, which are revealed in the scriptures of all times and all places. So if we just follow the process that has been given to us by Srila Prabhupada, we will be able to revive our God consciousness, our forgotten relationship with him. And sometimes, right now, we don't realize God is my father, mother, well-wisher, spiritual master and all. But in every, we have to start journaling in our lives. Whenever you are seeing some divine arrangement happening, whether in which you received something that you really needed or in which you did not receive something that you really needed, it was a divine arrangement. It's important for you to write down and think about how the Lord is personally intervening in my life. My personal realization is that Sri Sri Radha Neelamadhav, I mean what I'm seeing around me in the lives of all the devotees, Sri Sri Radha Neelamadhav are personally intervening in the lives of each and every devotee. They are personally reciprocating with each and every devotee. And just to observe, to see the magnanimity of the Lord and to see his greatness, their greatness, in how they are personally reciprocating with each one of us, it really humbles me a lot. And it makes me feel that no, he's really, they are really our mother, well-wisher, Lord, Father, spiritual master and worshipable deity. So such a practice helps me in understanding this thing. So we all must also try to discuss these things amongst ourselves that wow, you know, Krishna is so merciful. He is reciprocating like this with that devotee. And he is reciprocating like this with me and reciprocating. So when we start seeing and observing like that, then you can feel like that. Then you can feel that he is your resting place. And you eventually revive your relationship with him. Text 8. So now this text 8, that seeing Krishna, something natural for every resident of person in Dwarka, is actually natural for each and every individual soul. It is just that we are covered and we have forgotten it. But again, the Prabhupada process that he has given will give us a way in which we can even do what the residents of Dwarka are doing. And I will discuss how. Text 8. Aho sanatha bhavatasma yadvayam traivishtapanam api duradarshanam Premes, premas, mitas, nigda, nirikshanananam, pashye marupam, tava sarva saubhagam. Oh, it is our good luck that we have come again today under your protection by your presence, for your lordship rarely visits even the denizens of heaven. Now it is possible for us to look into your smiling face, which is full of affectionate glances. We can now see your transcendental form full of all auspiciousness. So now, you know, Prabhupada is writing down in the purport about how the denizens of heaven also do not get his darshan all the time. So the residents of Dwarka are considering themselves to be very, very fortunate. That they are thinking, wow, it is our good luck that we are able to see your smiling face, which is full of affectionate glances, and we can see your transcendental form, full of all auspiciousness. So they are not thinking, wow, we are better than the denizens of heaven, you know, we are getting to see you. They are not thinking like that. They are thinking, wow, what is this fortune that we have? So this gratitude and this, they don't have this feeling of entitlement. I am entitled to see you because I am Dwarkavasi. You are the king. You should be able, you have to come and give darshan to me. They are not thinking like that. They are just feeling so much gratitude when they are able to see the Lord. So Prabhupada writes down in the middle of the purport, this ocean of milk and the Shweta Deepa planet are the replica of Vaikuntha Lok within the universe. Neither Brahmaji nor the demigods like Indra can enter into this island of Shweta Deepa, but they can stand on the shore of the ocean of milk and transmit their message to Lord Vishnu, known as Shiradakshai Vishnu. Therefore, the Lord is rarely seen by them. But the inhabitants of Dwarka, because of their being pure devotees, without any tinge of the material contamination of fruitive activities and empiric speculation, philosophical speculation, can see him face to face by the grace of the Lord. This is the original state of the living entities and can be attained by reviving our natural and constitutional state of life,
which is discovered by devotional service only. So this natural condition of seeing the Lord face to face, because we are tinged with material contamination, it is lost for us right now. But Prabhupada is writing down that it can be revived by the process of devotional service only. There is no other way. So I want to point you all to a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. I had some reading targets which I haven't finished. But I have been reading from the third canto, and I am delayed in that. But anyway, in the third canto, or you know, for those of you can directly go to my blog, granthraj.blogspot.com. The first post on the homepage itself is the verse from the third canto, 28th chapter, 32nd verse. So third canto, 28th chapter, 32nd verse. And it says, a yogi should similarly meditate on the most benevolent smile of Lord Sri Hari, a smile which, for all those who bow to him, dries away the ocean of tears caused by intense grief. The yogi should also meditate on the Lord's arched eyebrows, which are manifested by his internal potency in order to charm the sex god for the good of the sages. So this is text 32. And after that, text 33, and I have pasted that also in that particular post. There's a version of from Rav Naomi of Nina Madhav on that particular post. So text 33 is, with devotion steeped in love and affection, the yogi should meditate within the core of his heart upon the laughter of Lord Vishnu. The laughter of Vishnu is so captivating that it can be easily meditated upon. When the Supreme Lord is laughing, one can see his small teeth, which resemble jasmine buds, rendered rosy by the splendor of his lips. Once devoting his mind to this, the yogi should no longer see anything else. And then there are more verses from the, again, the third chapter, third canto, 28th chapter, first verse. So this whole chapter is about the meditation on the Lord's transcendental form. So it begins with the feet, and it goes up to his face and his smile. And it talks about, in the first verse, it talks about the devotee should first concentrate his mind on the Lord's lotus feet, which are adorned with the marks of a thunderbolt, a gourd, a banner and a lotus. The splendor of their beautiful ruby nails resembles the orb of the moon and dispels the thick gloom of one's heart. And then text 22 of the same chapter, or is it text 2, I think. The blessed Lord Shiva becomes all the more blessed by bearing on his head the holy waters of the Ganges, which has its source in the water that washed the Lord's lotus feet. And the Lord's feet act like thunderbolts hurled to shatter the mountain of sin stored in the mind of the meditating devotee. One should therefore meditate on the Lord's lotus feet for a long time. The reason I am going through all these verses is that basically on meditating on the Lord's form. So here we are hearing about the Lord's lotus feet. Then we are hearing about the Lord's face. Now the entire chapter talks about the waist and the thighs and the chest and the arms and the chin and the neck and all those things. So every morning, every single day, and now by the mercy of the devotees, they are uploading the Lord's darshan every day on Facebook. But for those of us who can, we must try to go to the temple to get darshan of the Lord. And that's something I'm saying to myself, because I don't go. I live so close, but I don't go every day. So I should be going. So the point is that when we meditate on the Lord's form and we take darshan of the form of the Lord, then one thing is just seeing the Lord as we are seeing. We are able to be covered with full auspiciousness. We receive the Lord's mercy. And many unauspicious things from our heart are vanquished away just by taking darshan of the Lord. And on this blog, if you go on the left, there are more verses, like in the left there are labels. If you search for darshan, there will be many verses from Srimad Bhagavatam that talk about the darshan of the Lord. I'll probably share it with all of you next time, in the next email I send out. But just by taking darshan of the Lord, many of the material desires are vanquished. Just by appreciating the beauty of the Lord, all everything else in the material world looks like nonsense to us. We are not attracted to that because we are so attractive. The Lord is all attractive. And so many such unwanted desires leave us. And we are relieved from so much sin that we have committed. We are uncovered from our conditioning. And all this happens just by taking darshan of the Lord. So we must take darshan of the Lord every single day. And with very, very carefully, with a lot of awe and reverence and love in our heart. So, text 9.
Yarhambuja kshapasasarabho bhavan kurun madhun vathasuhiddhidrikshaya tatravda koti pratimakshano bhavan.
Manu, your name should be Mini. Yeah, because you just
want to
get things done.
Yeah, Sangeeta, can you go on mute, please?
Tatrad koti pratimakshano bhavet ravim vinakshnor ivanasta vachyuta.
Translation. O lotus-eyed Lord, whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan or Hastinapur, to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like millions of years. O infallible one, at that time our eyes become useless, as if bereft of the sun. So we will read this entire purport. Can anyone please read this purport? Alright, I'll read it. We are all proud of our material senses for making experiments to determine the existence of God. But we forget that our senses are not absolute by themselves. They can only act under certain conditions. For example, our eyes. Just 1 minute. As long as the sunshine is there, our eyes are useful to a certain extent. But in the absence of sunshine, the eyes are useless. Lord Shri Krishna, being the primary Lord, the Supreme Truth, is compared to the sun. Without Him, all our knowledge is either false or partial. The opposite of the sun is the darkness, and similarly, the opposite of Krishna is Maya or illusion. The devotees of the Lord can see everything in true perspective due to the light disseminated by Lord Krishna. By the grace of the Lord, the pure devotee cannot be in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, it is necessary that we must always be in the sight of Lord Krishna, so that we can see both ourselves and the Lord with His different energies. As we cannot see anything in the absence of the sun, so also we cannot see anything, including our own self, without the factual presence of the Lord. Without Him, all our knowledge is covered by illusion. So here also, we can see this, understand the separation in two ways in our own lives. One way is, when we are in away from our Prabhudatta Desh, which is the place of our service. Suppose we've gone to India or we are gone somewhere else out of town. And then, you know, there are so many things happening in Seattle and so many services we may be connected with. So then we end up missing all those things. Right? We all have that miss. We all miss it. We all miss Seattle. We all miss Rishi Radha Neel Madhav in some way or the other. So that just try to remember and feel those experiences when you are away from, you know, services or away from Krishna Katha, away from the association of devotees. How does that feel to you? You feel very weakened. You feel as if something is missing in your life, right? And another thing is when the darshan closes or you are not able to come to the temple, or when you come to the temple, the darshan of the Lord is closed. Then how do you feel? Right? You feel little dejected that you are not able to get the darshan of the Lord, like that. So, this is something similar that the, something actually much more depth is what the Dwarkavasis are feeling. And they are expressing their love to the Lord. So the devotees, Prabhupada writes down, we already read this purport. So as we cannot see anything in the absence of the sun, so also we cannot see anything including our own self without the factual presence of the Lord. So we think we know ourselves very well, but we will really know ourselves when we are able to see ourselves in connection with the Lord. That means you have to be able to see the Lord and understand the Lord. So that will happen by the process of devotional service, as we already read. So the more we are able to execute the process of devotional service with strong faith as given by Srila Prabhupada, the more we will be able to get the darshan of the Lord. And the more we get the darshan of the Lord, the more we will be able to understand our own position as eternal servant of the Lord. So very deep. So something to understand and something to think about. Text 10. Katham vayam nata chiroshite tvai prasanna drishtya akhiratapa shoshanam jive mate sundaraha sashobhitam apashyamana vadanam manoharam iti chodirita vacha prajanam bhakta vatsala shinvano nugraham drishtya vitanvan pravishat puram. O Master, if you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish all our sufferings. How can we exist without your presence? And we just read the similar verse from the 3rd canto, 28th chapter, about how the Lord's smile can vanquish all the sufferings and can take away all our desires. So all these material desires that we have, because of them we are suffering. And because of them, those material desires, we commit sin. Because of the sin, then we suffer more. So when we just look at the Lord's attractive face and His smile, it vanquishes all our suffering. So Prabhupada writes down in the end, everyone of us wants to remove the miseries of life, but we do not know how to do it. The solution is given here, and it rests on us to assimilate or not. So the first thing is taking darshan of the Lord regularly and offering some beautiful prayers to Him. And then the most important thing is to follow the process of devotional service. So in the process of devotional service, all these things are included that are being mentioned here. Taking darshan of the Lord, offering prayers to Him, chanting His holy name, staying in the satsang of devotees. All these things are already there in the process given to us by Prabhupada. Text 11. Madhu bhoja dashar hara kukurandha kavishnibhi asmatulya banai guptam nagai bhogavatim viva. As Bhogavati, the capital of Nagaloka, is protected by the Nagas, so was Dwarka protected by the descendants of Vrishni. Bhoja, Madhu, Dashar, Dasharha, Arha, Kukura, Andhaka, etc., who were as strong as Lord Krishna. Text 12. Sarvartu Sarva Vibhava Punya Vrikshalatashramai Udyano Pavana Ramai Vrita Padma Karashriyam. The city of Dwarka Puri was filled with the opulences of all seasons. There were hermitages, orchards, flower gardens, parks, and reservoirs of water, breeding lotus flowers all over. So here is the beauty. Now this section is about the beauty of Dwarka Puri. And this beauty is being described very nicely. And this purport is very important. So here Prabhupada is explaining. See, now, this is 5,000 years ago, and the city of Dwarkapuri is so beautiful. But now, with all these industries and all these gadgets and all the landscapers and all the city designers and everything, all the cities look extremely ugly, with grey roads, highways, lack of green things, no place for the animals, lack of variety in flora and fauna. This is what we have reduced it to. So we can read this purport. I'll request somebody to read the purport so I can catch my breath. Or just give me a minute so I catch my breath and then I can get back to reading.
I can read.
Yes, thank you.
Perfection of human civilization is made possible by utilizing the gifts of nature in their own way. As we find herewith in the description of its opulence, Dwarka was surrounded by flower gardens and fruit orchards, along with reservoirs of water and growing lotuses. There is no mention of mills and factories supported by slaughterhouses, which are necessary paraphernalia of the modern metropolis. The propensity to utilize nature's own gifts is still there, even in the heart of modern civilized men. The leaders of modern civilization select their own residential quarters in a place where there are such naturally beautiful gardens and reservoirs of water, but they leave the common men to reside in congested areas without parks and gardens. Herein, of course, we find a different description of the city of Dwarka. It is understood that the whole dham or residential quarter was surrounded by such gardens and parks with reservoirs of water where lotuses grew. It is understood that all the people depended on nature's gifts of fruits and flowers without industrial enterprises promoting filthy huts and slums for residential quarters. Advancement of civilization is estimated not on the growth of mills and factories to deteriorate the finer instincts of the human being, but on developing the potent spiritual instincts of human beings and giving them a chance to go back to Godhead. Development of factories and mills is called Ugra Karma or pungent activities, and such activities deteriorate the finer sentiments of the human being and society to form a dungeon of demons. We find herein the mention of pious trees which produce seasonal fruits and flowers and fruits. The impious trees are useless jungles only, and they can only be used to supply fuels. In the modern civilization, such impious trees are planted on the sides of roads. Human energy should be properly utilized in developing the finer senses for spiritual understanding, in which lies the solution of life. Fruits, flowers, beautiful gardens, parks and reservoirs of water with ducks and swans playing in the midst of lotus flowers and cows giving sufficient milk and butter are essential for developing the finer tissues of the human body. As against this, the dungeons of mines, factories and workshops develop demonic propensities in the working class. The vested interests flourish at the cost of the working class, and consequently there are severe clashes between them in so many ways. The description of Dwarka Dham is the ideal of human civilization.
Hare Krishna, thank you for reading. So, very beautifully read by Sudha Mataji. And it's nice that she read it. I'll connect something to what she does in her life. So here there's one line that hits me a lot. Where is it? Yeah, in the end of the second paragraph, advancement of civilization is estimated not on the growth of mills and factories to deteriorate the finer instincts of the human being, but on developing the potent spiritual instincts of human beings and giving them a chance to go back to Godhead. So now one may think, how come this line is connected to everything? Prabhupada is already connected, but I just want to say something that I get an inspiration when I read this, every time I read this line. So, by the growth of mills and factories, what happens? One thing is everyone is subject to some kind of 9 to 5 jobs. You're stuck in it. Nobody's morning is peaceful. Everybody's morning is so busy trying to get to work, sending the children to school. Nobody wakes up peacefully, right? And in that we are trying to cram our chanting and cram all those things. Go to work, that takes up a bulk of your life. And then you come back tired. And the thing is, you're not only tired, but you're sapped of the spiritual force of your life, where you could, because of all the association you get. And the association you have over there is, everyone is trying to make a profit. Everyone, right? Whether your co-workers or your bosses and all, everyone is trying to get that promotion or get that thing, because of which they want to get more money in their life. To do what? More sense gratification, or to feel we have become rich. Now the more they do that, the more somebody develops a profit motive tendency, the more their life is centered around themselves and less around Lord Shri Krishna. So all this, then it reduces your finer instincts. What are the finer instincts? Finer instincts are to learn how to introspect, to, you know, have the peace of mind, to give yourself in service to the Lord, and to read Bhagavatam. See, after all that work and everything, you come back and read Bhagavatam, it seems very alien. It seems from a different planet altogether. It's like how, you know, when you go to India, because India, going to India was a recent experience for me. You go to India and you come back, right? within 24 hours you are completely in a, your subtle body has to adjust to everything. Different ways of doing things, different types of people, different communication, different energy in the environment. You know, there it's crowded, here there's nobody in the house, there it's noisy, here it's totally quiet. You know, it's like a total shock for your system to change. I mean, some people like me welcome that shock. I like it like that. But it's still a shock, something that you're trying to adjust to. So when you are surrounded by people who are in that profit motive and surrounded by all these mills and factories and these machines and these sharp pointy objects and sharp lines and grey and brown and black and blue, all these dull colors, they affect your sensitivity to learning higher spiritual things. So it's not your fault. I'm not saying it's, it is, you know, you have to go to work. I'm just saying it's nice to be aware, and Prabhupada is making us aware. So it's important that when people who are at work, you know, they take care of what they are associating with and what they are exposing to and how they can make that environment Krishna conscious for themselves to continue. So another thing is that at one level it is talking about that. The other level is that we need to surround ourselves with beauty. Like once when Prabhupada disciple Radhika Mataji, she used to be in Seattle before, once she was staying at my house, and she was just telling, you know, why don't you have drapes? I said, these blinds cover the window. I didn't have curtains at one place. She said, no, you need to have drapes. All these sharp lines you see, they make your heart very pointed and sharp. And then I said, like, it didn't make sense to me at that time, but then because she said that, she made sure I hung a bed sheet over there so that she does not have to see those sharp blinds, the lines of the blinds. And actually I felt a difference by just putting something beautiful. She said, you must surround yourself with beautiful things because it helps you develop the finer part of your brain. So all this beauty is important, and this doing creative things is very important. And the reason I said that it's nice Sudha read this thing is because Sudha herself, like we were in one seminar, and then she was telling about, she tries to do something creative every single day in her life, where she's trying to do something creative and artistic because it helps her in many ways. So we all, and then you know, we are, there are so many devotional arts that we can engage ourselves in serving to Krishna. So when we started this ladies program, I asked Harivilas Prabhu for, you know, direction, you know, what is his vision and how does he want us to proceed. So Prabhuji said that the gopis were constantly engaged. They were the most intelligent. Right? And they were constantly engaged in all these devotional arts of serving the Lord. Whether it was decorating the Lord, whether it was creating a kunja for them, whether it was making beautiful patterns, whether it was they themselves dressing up nicely, whether it was them making, cooking very wonderful things or making very beautiful garlands or doing music. So all these things they did to serve the Lord, and basically that's all we need to serve the Lord. This whole other things, this civilization, this alternate civilization that has been created, actually is not needed to serve the Lord. You can just serve the Lord with all the nature's gifts of fruits and flowers. And you don't need all these industrial enterprises to serve the Lord. And last example I want to give in this this particular section, this verse, is that in Greece, there were two cities, the city of Athens and the city of Sparta. And I remember this because we studied this in school. And the city of Athens, and you all must remember this, that it was fully very cultural. A lot of scholars, a lot of experts came from that city. And they're a very cultural place. A lot of good music was being created. A lot of good painting, artistry, architecture was very beautiful. There was place for everyone to live nicely, grow nicely. Beauty, color, all these finer things of life. And on the other hand, the city of Sparta was completely military. Fully, you know, it was only about, you know, having this particular military and growing this military, and nobody could, you know, serve any of their desires or do any of these creative things. Everything was very grey, very not beautiful and everything. So when the Greek civilization was falling over, actually Sparta was the city that fell down first, because there was nothing to help the people develop their finer instincts. But Athens, of course, was attacked first and was broken down first, but the people could still continue. And if you read, you know, like the city of Sparta, nowadays if you read, you know, Sparta, I mean, if you read books, you will read, oh, they were in very spartan surroundings. That is to indicate that there was nothing in the house. So all these things can affect the brain. So it's important to see the horizon every day, to see a water body every day, and to surround yourself with very beauty, classically beauty, not new abstract and all those things, but things that are classically beautiful, the music that is classically beautiful, or the artistry that is classically beautiful, because it helps you develop your finer intelligence just by learning how to appreciate those things. And then we are not just after some beautiful things to develop our finer intelligence. We learn how to create those beautiful things and surround Lord Krishna with those beautiful things like that. Sudha, you would like to say something about, if you can at work, something about the creative aspects and how it helps you?
So, Mataji, I don't think, I never thought on all these lines. It's just that I have a very huge propensity towards that, towards music, dance, you know, painting and crafts and sewing. And so I grew up watching my mother do most of these things, not music and dance, of course. So I'm just fanning my propensity, and so that's how it gives me a tremendous amount of relief when I do, even if five minutes of things, even it can be as simple as, you know, just repairing one of the torn clothes. So just by the touch of sewing machine, I feel so joyful the whole day. I don't know why. So and that's the reason why I do what I do. But again, you know, only today after hearing you, I realized that how it actually appeals to the finer senses and how it helps, you know, the brain to develop in that way. So I personally never realized that. I only do it because I like it. I love it so much.
So it helps you relax also?
Yes.
That's nice to hear.
It helps me relax. Especially now after I started working, I realize a lot. And earlier I was just doing it because I had all the time at hand. But now since I just don't have time, I value it all the more.
Thank you for sharing. Anyone else would like to share anything on this particular point?
Yes, Mataji, I agree with Sudha, Mataji. I also love dance and music, and it cheers me a lot. And I'm also so stressed that I'm thinking I should start Kathak dance again to revive back my memories and really do some stress relieving mechanism, you know, to cheer my mind, basically, you know.
Nice to hear that. All power to you, so that you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, personally for me also, sometimes, like, I can be a person who's always in the head all the time, thinking and doing things. And I get very tired. And what I've seen is that when I try to do something creative, as Sudha was mentioning, even if it is fixing a button on my dress, or if it is painting something, or if it is just practicing on the harmonium, I feel very rejuvenated and very calm and very peaceful. You know, or even going out for a walk and just appreciating all the beauty, the flowers, you know, now it's spring, so there's so many beautiful flowers coming up, the trees are blossoming. And then 228th Avenue is very beautiful because when you go up and down, you can see the mountains and the trees. Just seeing those beautiful things also, it just helps me calm myself down a lot. Like, because I get really tired sometimes during the day doing this work in the head. So when I go about just appreciating nature also, just something simple as just observing nature, it just makes me feel very, very calm. Or just playing the harmonium, or painting something in the house, or fixing something, joining something, it just helps me a lot. So, I mean, you have three people saying that to you, and Prabhupada is also saying that. So try to develop something creative, because we're always trying to achieve something, achieve the schedule that we've set for ourselves, achieve the amount of tasks that we set for ourselves during the day and all that. It all becomes like very unnatural to us. Our natural state is to surround ourselves with creativity and to engage in creative things to serve Lord Sri Krishna. That's what the Vrindavan Vasis are doing all the time. They are not doing anything else but this. So text 12, we'll read text 12 and then, not text 12, sorry, we already read text 12. So we'll read text 13 and 14 and I'll end a little bit 3 minutes early because I have another call to get into on 11:30. Text 13. Gopura Dwarga Ma. Yeah, I forgot to tell. Also, some people have who have deities at home, and then when they dress their deities, and then decorate them nicely, and take care of them nicely, that also gives like a lot of satisfaction to the heart because you're dressing Krishna, dressing God Nithai, you feel very happy doing that because that is your natural position actually. Text 13. Gopura Dwarga Margeshu Krita Kautuka Toranam Chitra Dhvaja Pataka Grahe Anta Pratihata Tapam. The city gateway, the household doors and festooned arches along the roads were all nicely decorated with festive signs like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. Flags, garlands and painted signs and slogans all combined to shade the sunshine. Signs of decoration and special festivals were also collected from the gifts of nature, such as plantain trees, the mango trees, fruits and flowers. Mango trees, coconut palms and plantain trees are still accepted as auspicious signs. The flags mentioned above were all painted with a picture of either Garuda or Hanuman, the two great servitors of the Lord. For devotees, such paintings and decorations are still adored and the servitor of the master is paid more respects for the satisfaction of the Lord. So we all still do that on festivals and we make rangoli outside the door and all those things, right? So welcome the Lord inside. Text 14. Sammarjita Mahamarga Rathyapanaka Chatvaram Chatvaram Shittam Ganda Jalai Roptam Phala Pushpaksha Tankurai. The highways, subways, lanes, markets and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. And we still do these things, right? Unbroken seeds of grains of fruits in the seedling stage were considered auspicious and they are still so used by the Hindus in general on festival days. So we all still do that. And the problem is in this country, they don't allow you to decorate your door and everything. They come in, like I remember every time I put something out on my door, I got a notice that please remove this. It's not making us all look alike and it's making your house look different. And it's not according to the rules of how the door should be. So all these things can affect. But all these things are required because also Prabhupada is telling distilling flowers like rose and kevada essence were requisite to wet the roads, streets and lanes. So they were scenting the roads and all, not for yourself, but to welcome the Lord. So next week we will read from text 15. Thank you very much. If there is any discussion, I can go on for another minute, but I have to get on to a call at 11:30. Gantrat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, God Premanande Hari Hari Bol. I am very fortunate to get a chance to read this with all of you. It's wonderful. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.